Good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining our webinar today, From Ships at Sea to UCTV, where you will learn all about UC radio frequency licenses and the role we play in FCC coordination. I'm Connie Garrity, the FCC coordinator here at UCOP, and I'm joined by Sandra Wasson, who's the general manager of the KALX radio station at UC Berkeley. I'm going to start off the webinar today and answer the question I know you're all thinking about. How did the IT department end up with the FCC? Good question. First, in case you didn't know what FCC stands for, it is the Federal Communications Commission. In December 1982, the responsibility for this role was formally delegated by then-President Saxon to the Vice President of ITS, which now is Tom Andriola. It does make sense because IT is the functional home for network communications and technology areas. So what does a UC license do? What is it about? Well, actually, we have 250 FCC licenses issued to 10 campuses and across 5 medical centers. There's 135 categories of these licenses, and we have 27 categories of them. Today, I'm just going to touch on some of the most used ones, and they are radio TV licenses, our ship licenses, 800 megahertz public safety, educational broadcasting, along with microwave, experimental, and RSTAs. What's the role of the FCC coordinator? I mean, what do I really do all day? Well, first you should know that the regions own all UC radio frequency stations. Every one of these 250 licenses is in the name of the regents of the University of California. We manage the licenses to ensure compliance with FCC regulations. We prepare new license requests for campuses. We keep existing licenses renewed and current. That's important. We'll come back to that later. And we respond to FCC correspondence and complaints. We work with general counsel, outside counsel, vendors such as Motorola, Sprint. We basically coordinate all FCC-mandated programs. Now, the FCC complaints. This is not something you want to happen very often or at all, even when it's, quote, not our fault. An example was several years ago, UC received a formal complaint from the FCC regarding illegal broadcasting of a UCLA football game. That started the wheel spinning. We contacted UCLA Athletics, Communications Department, General Counsel here, Counsel there, and a myriad of other departments. And the fact that this occurred at the Rose Bowl, which is a venue that UC does not own, made it more complicated. And it turned out the interference was due to a traveling van that was parked there trying to broadcast the game. The good news was they weren't UC students in that van, but the problem got solved. Next is our public safety licenses. This is one of UC's most important category of licenses. We have 19 of these in the 800 megahertz range, and they're used for public safety radio systems by our police and firefighters. This picture on the right shows an example of a police radio. These are heavy. They're over 4 pounds each. They're expensive, and as you can see, they're complicated. Well, in 1999, these systems began experiencing interference, often dangerous interference, and this was noted in various police departments across the country. It was documented in case after case for years and finally presented to the FCC. The interference was discovered to be due to cellular providers, mainly Sprint Nextel. Turns out the public safety channels were mixed among commercial cellular channels and thereby making interference with our public safety channels. So in 2002, the FCC issued the rebanding order, which would eradicate this interference problem. So the 800 megahertz rebanding process. Basically, FCC gave Sprint Nextel the upper portion of the 800 megahertz spectrum, and us public safety licensees got the lower portion. What this means was that it would require every public safety radio across the United States to be retuned, which would be put these new frequencies in, or replaced if they were just too old to even take the retuning. The project timeline was optimistic, 30 months for the whole country, and it would start in June 2005. I want you to look at the map to the right and look at our great state of California. You can see that it's divided in half. The process was going to divide the country into waves, 1 through 4. But California was divided into wave 1, the first part, and wave 4, the fourth part. So that would mean all the Northern California campuses, Berkeley, Davis, Merced, and Santa Cruz, would have their police radio frequencies changed, but the Southern California campuses, UCLA, Irvine, Riverside, Santa Barbara, and San Diego, would still be using the old frequencies. This is a problem for the UC system because the UC police provide assistance to campuses up and down the state. Remember Michelle Obama as the commencement speaker at UC Merced's first graduation? Well, all UC police provided assistance to the Merced campus at that time. And the police could not bring their own radios to another campus then for immediate use and assistance because basically the North couldn't talk to the South and the South couldn't talk to the North. So the only way we could solve this problem would be to have loaner radios for campuses available for use by visiting police departments. And since Sprint was paying for them, the negotiations got a bit testy. It's even more difficult once we got that approved. Now that you see the Wave 4 rebanding that was supposed to optimistically be done in June, 30 months after June 2005, well, it's still ongoing for all our UC Southern campuses, but I am told by the FCC that it'll be completed by the summer. The campuses and I are hopeful. Another type of license is our ship licenses for UC research vessels. The Roger Revell was a research vessel built by the U.S. Navy in 1995. This is a picture of it here. Scripps at UC San Diego, along with Santa Barbara and Santa Cruz Marine Science Institutes, won the competition to operate the vessel. These ships do require FCC licenses to sail. They operate internationally, they communicate with foreign coasts, and they carry radio and research equipment. As I mentioned earlier, it's really important to keep all UC licenses renewed, none more so than with the ship licenses. In the late 90s, the Roger Revell was set to leave the dock on an extended voyage. One thing you should know is that a ship's captain will not leave the dock without a current, active, hard copy of the ship's FCC license. Unfortunately, the Roger Revell license had lapsed, wasn't renewed, and the captain refused to sail. The cost of that ship sitting at the dock was $500 a day. As the cost mounted, complaints moved through the ranks at UC San Diego and made their way to then-Chancellor Dines, who contacted then-President Atkinson, who contacted then-Vice President ITS Stuart Lynn. Things moved really quickly then. The license was renewed, the ship sailed, and lessons were learned about license renewals. So as I mentioned before, STAs. These are special temporary authority licenses, and they permit the operation of a communications facility for a limited period of time, just 6 months usually. They can be issued for emergency situations or due to circumstances when the licensee can't wait for normal FCC licensing processes. As you can see from my little friend here with the cobwebs on him, he's waiting for his FCC license, which is coming through normal channels. They must be renewed every 6 months. If they're not, they'll be lost, and you will not be allowed to get them again. And we currently have 8 STAs. 2 were issued in 2007. I'll get back to that. One of the STAs we used was for the UC Santa Barbara campus during their terrible meningitis outbreak recently. A myriad of healthcare officials traveled to the campus, and they brought special radios that needed licensing. We were successful in securing an STA in only a few days for these radios. Now, the STAs from 2007 have been diligently renewed every 6 months for our 800 megahertz systems, which you just learned is still ongoing. When that rebanding is really complete, we can proceed with permanent licensing. Educational broadcast system licenses. Well, we have 10 of these, and these licenses are only allowed for nonprofit educational institutions. They're used for delivery of instruction and educational programming. For example, campus research groups send video and data 24/7 for their studies and experiments. You can see our diligent grad student right here on the beach studying. But they've also been used for studies with such things as weather patterns, traffic patterns, things like that. They're valuable because the FCC allows schools that to lease the excess capacity they have when they're not using all of the spectrum to commercial telecommunication companies like Clearwire and Sprint. We've leased portions of all 10 of our licenses, and we get significant revenue from each. In addition to the revenue, though, the contracts often include building out technology infrastructure in the school and the community. So it's a double whammy of good news for us. And last but not least is our TV and radio licenses. Yes, UCTV has its own TV station. It's a non-commercial educational TV station, and it's operated by the San Diego campus. It's been in existence for over 20 years, and it provides 24-hour educational enrichment programs. And these programs come from the UC campuses, the labs, the medical centers, and they involve documentaries, lectures, debates, interviews, even live music performance. I really encourage you to go to the website and see the great things that are happening at UCTV. Several years ago in 2011, the channel had to switch from analog to digital. Given the border location, we had to verify that it had no interference with Mexican stations. Well, this required approval from both FCC and the Mexico Federal Telecommunications Commission. A lot of paperwork, a lot of time. Now I'm going to turn it over, thankfully, because of my voice, to Sandra Watson, who is our radio station manager at KALX.
Hello, everybody. I'm Sandra Watson, and I'm the general manager of KALX FM, which is at UC Berkeley. And UC has six non-commercial educational FM stations licensed to the regions of the University of California. All of these stations were licensed in the 1960s. Berkeley, Davis, Irvine, Riverside, Santa Barbara, and Santa Cruz all have FM stations. KALX started as a carrier current station without an FCC license in the dorms in 1962. We finally got our license in 1967. The regents had to apply for each one of these licenses. And we were licensed at 10 watts with a transmitter on top of Eshelman Hall. Eshelman Hall is a building that just got torn down this past year. Our transmitter is no longer up there. The repurposed cigar box that you see on the slide was the first mixing board that the station used. A bunch of students wanted to create a radio station, and so they took a cigar box and repurposed it to be the mixing board for KALX when it first started. Every station has a really interesting story and history, and you can find out more information about each of our stations at the websites shown on the slide. All of the stations are relatively low watt, with KALX operating since 1982 at 500 watts from a transmitter that is up at Lawrence Hall of Science. So now we're on the air, and regulatorily, radio is licensed to operate in the public interest, convenience, and necessity. Radio has to live by a very complex set of regulations from the FCC, but as you can tell, there are other organizations that radio has to comply with their regulations as well. Today I'm going to talk about the FCC mostly, two of the biggest these four that I'm going to talk about are not the only regulations. It's very, very complex, and there are lots of those regulations. And at the end, there'll be a link where you can go and get more information about the FCC and radio, well, broadcast radio and television regulations. But the first one that really is I think quite interesting is indecency, obscenity, and profanity regulations that affect all air broadcasting, both television and radio. These regulations have to do with the content of speech and with visuals for TV as well. It is the one area where speech is regulated. I'm not going to go into the definitions because that would be an entire webinar by itself on indecency, obscenity, and profanity. But I thought I would tell you a story about one of the largest fines ever for indecent programming, and that happened with the Howard Stern Show. Between 1990 and 2004, the FCC issued fines to radio broadcasters totaling $2.5 million. This was for material the FCC deemed to be indecent. This is the highest amount for any single radio show. Fines for indecent material, or profanity for that matter, are based on complaints from the listeners. The FCC had received complaints for the Howard Stern Show since 1981. In the end, Infinity Broadcasting, and Infinity was Howard Stern's employer, settled the fines for $1.71 million and untold attorney's fees, I'm sure, to dismiss all of the outstanding indecency cases, both the ones that had been brought to their attention and those that were still on the books. Howard Stern then moved to Sirius Satellite Radio, which the FCC does not regulate. One of the other interesting ones is quarterly programming reports. Every broadcast station has to have a public file that is accessible to the public during business hours. Non-commercial educational radio has to have a paper file. One of the items that has to be in this public file is quarterly programming reports called issues and programs lists. This area is one of the most fined, as it is something that you have to self-report that you did not file in a timely manner or at all if you did not file them in your license renewal application. So you tell them in your license renewal application, I didn't file these two reports, and then you will get a fine in the mail. At the end of every quarter, and by the 10th day following the end of the quarter, every station puts a list of programs that they have aired that have addressed the most significant community issues during the previous 3 months. This list includes the issue covered, when the program aired, and how long the program was. Two other, I think, rather interesting regulations that the FCC has is the broadcast of telephone conversations and station identification. Station ID is the requirement that at the top of every hour, a station has to give its legal ID, which is its call letters followed by its community of license, not the station slogan. So in the Bay Area, for example, there's a station whose slogan is Live 105, but at the top of the hour, they can't say that. So, for example, at CalX, we have to say KALX Berkeley at the top of every hour, and if not, you get fined if somebody complains, and obviously sometimes people complain. Recently, a commercial station got in trouble for using their slogan as opposed to their station ID. Broadcasts of telephone conversations is interesting because the regulation is that before you broadcast a conversation with somebody else, all parties to the phone call must be notified of the station's intent to broadcast the call. Prior notification has to be done when you are not recording the phone call. The commission is really concerned with this area because consent is required from the onset. So those calls you hear on commercial radio where the person on the other end of the call is surprised that the station is, and that station is either going to get fined, which happens a lot, or they're making the listener of the station think it's a surprise when it really has been pre-planned. So obviously I've mentioned just a couple of other areas that have regulatory influence on radio, and that is obviously the U.S. Copyright Office, the IRS, and others. I won't go into that, but if you're interested, I can always send you information about where to get more information about that. It's really important to note that one of the major roles of the advisor, or the general manager in my case, is keeping up to date on changes in regulations that affect our stations. One of the ways that you see stations keep abreast of these changes is that all of the advisors or managers of all the UC stations communicate with each other on a monthly basis through an informal organization we call the UC Radio Network, and we routinely work with UCOP on regulatory issues, and that relationship is really great. Current operations, all of the stations are licensed by the FCC as non-commercial educational stations. So the rules are different for us than they are for commercial stations. Some of the differences are that we cannot sell or broadcast commercials. The political programming rules are different, and the licensing requirements are different. The stations are run mostly by student volunteers and some community members, and with a very small professional staff, and small means from 0 to 4. Numbers of volunteers at the stations vary widely, but at CalX we have about 200 to 250 volunteers depending on the time of year. Managers of all of the various departments at the station are volunteers, and it is peers overseeing the work of peers. Every station operates 24/7, 365. So that means we're on the air on holidays and school breaks. The stations run on small budgets. We are UC and listener supported for the most part. Most stations do an on-air fundraiser like other community and NPR stations, but it's a different feel. I think you would probably find it enjoyable. We are not talking large numbers of donors like NPR stations receive. So, of course, donations are always welcome to any one of our stations, and you can get a station T-shirt as a thank you. All of the stations carry really diverse programming, and it is a curated experience with volunteers doing the programming that you hear. We strive to provide programming that is substantially different than that aired on commercial radio. At CalX, we broadcast music, sports, news, and public affairs programming. We air diverse music as well, and as a part of our mission to educate, every CalX DJ is encouraged to play a variety of musical styles and genres. Our public affairs programming includes shows about graduate student research, science, the arts, and politics. We also air programming produced by students at the Graduate School of Journalism. The image that you see on this slide is of our co-sports directors last year calling a baseball game, and we broadcast play-by-play of three Cal sports, football, basketball, and baseball, and then we also have news on the air twice a day during the week. There's a link under the photo to a video and a story that was done by the UC Berkeley News Center on the CalX student sports announcers, which is kind of cute, and you can always go and watch that as well. CalX and all the UC stations provide a great public service and add value to the campus, the community, and to its volunteers. The campus radio station provides students with leadership development opportunities, educational opportunities, access to interview people they would not get to interview otherwise, and a great place to learn about radio and other aspects of the broadcast media. In terms of providing that amazing opportunity, I have a couple stories from the past. In the late 1960s, a couple of students aired a call in conversation with John Lennon. John had called into the station from the Bed-In for Peace in Montreal, Canada, and so the students were able to talk to him about the People's Park demonstrations. The other example is Larry Bear, who's the current CEO of the San Francisco Giants. Well, he was a student at Cal in the late 1970s and was then the CalX sports director. As a junior, he negotiated with the Oakland A's owner, Charlie Finley, to make CalX the official radio station of the Oakland A's for the first 16 games when they didn't have a commercial broadcaster. Barrett was the play-by-play announcer. CalX at the time was a 10-watt station, and I'm told that you couldn't actually hear the broadcast at the stadium because it was too far away from where the 10 watts went. Part of the mission of the station is also in its relationship to the community, and that's the campus and beyond. We do public service announcements. They're a really important part of the station's programming. At CalX, we do PSAs about campus organizations or events, local nonprofits, and other organizations, twice an hour, student groups, that kind of stuff. The station also functions as a communications outlet for emergency information and as a participating member of the Emergency Alert System. The Emergency Alert System is FCC, FEMA, Weather Service, National Alert System, and I'm sure you've probably heard EAS tones when you listen to broadcast radio or television. As far as the communication, you know, one example of how important the radio stations are with regards to communication was when Santa Barbara, the radio station there, was instrumental in providing the community, both the campus and the surrounding area, with information on the big fires in 2008 and 2009 in Santa Barbara. They provided information about the campus and the resources the campus was providing the community, as well as information from local municipalities. Every one of the UC stations has great stories, and they can show you the value of their station to the students and to the campus and the community. And it all stems from the license to have a radio station that the regions hold. So at this point, we will open it up for questions from all of you who are in attendance.
The conference has been unmuted.
What? Something about being unmuted. They muted the conference? Oh.
Hear you all now.
Okay, this, you can ask questions now. This is Connie Garrity. I promise I won't cough anymore, okay? Unless I don't like the question, then I will.
Hi, Connie. This is Tommy Andreola. Great presentation, both from you and Sandra. I have a question, which is, I know we have, you know, kind of the existing licenses and stations. You talked about the television station. Is it kind of a stable situation, or are we in an expanding mode, or, I mean, is any of this affected by changes that technology are bringing?
Good question.
In regard to the TV station, it is very stable, but it is expanding because of the switch from analog to digital. Many of these non-commercial stations have spectrum that commercial entities would like, and the FCC is talking about doing an auction. It's still in the talking phase, but if stations are kind of financially not viable, it might be a way for them to get money for their for their educational institutions. And it's frightening because Sandra can tell you, for radio stations too, they operate on a thin string. And there was one at a school in San Francisco that was lost. They sold it, they made a lot of money on it.
Not very much, really, actually. But as far as the expansion, so radio has moved to also broadcasting on the Internet, so all of the UC stations stream their audio online, so people can get the radio station on their phones, they can get it at their computer. So it really, the distribution has gone worldwide, and so we have listeners who hear us in London, all over the world. So it really has gone beyond just being terrestrial radio.
Thank you all, and this will be put up on the ITS website in case you want to go back and learn more or review our presentation. Thank you.